or on the path of the flesh.
And now all the roommates are thinking about each other. And if I think this about him, then he'll think this about me. Let me ask you a question. Are the people you eat lunch with, are the people in your group, are the people you socialize with, are they characterized as walking on the path, or are they currently on the path of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, love, kindness? Or would you say that they're off the path? Now, if we're honest with each other, and I think that's what we're trying to promote here, is a supportive community that's able to be honest, then we're going to realize that lots and lots and lots and lots of our roommates aren't really on the right path. They've stepped off. Here's another question that comes out of this verse. Brethren, even if a man is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness. You who are spiritual. Now, who are these folks? Who are the spiritual folks? I can remember being a pastor at Grace Church, very first year ever. They had this thing called POD, Pastor of the Day. And you know how when you're in a large medical facility, they got a doctor that's always on call. And no matter what time of day, what time of night, that doctor's on call. And all the other doctors keep their regular appointments, but one doctor's free to meet any emergency around. Well, we kind of had a system like that at Grace Church, about 30 pastors, and you'd rotate through about one time a month, and you're up. And no matter what happens that day at the church, no matter who comes in off the street, no matter who calls, if he isn't already tied to a specific pastor, it's an emergency and he's yours. And here I am, I'm scared absolutely to death. It's one of my first times up for POD. And the phone rings, my secretary says, Russell, we got a POD on the phone. I say, great. Pick up this phone. She says, nah. She goes on and on and on. Very nice lady about this friend that she has who is struggling in tremendous sin. She's about ready to, she's contemplating separating from her husband. And this, the lady who's talking to me says, and I'm looking at this verse right here in Galatians 6:1. So I opened my Bible and I must confess to you, I looked at it probably for the first time in my life. And I said, brethren, if any man is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual. And she's asking me, who are the spiritual ones? Am I spiritual, she says? Can I go and restore? Or should that be you? Because you're a pastor. Can't tell you how many times people would come to me as a pastor at Grace Church and have come to me here at this school as in somewhat of a leadership position and said, I've got to talk to you about so-and-so. That they're doing this wrong and this wrong and this wrong and this wrong, and you're in leadership. You need to go talk to them about it. I remember my very first episode of that ever. At Grace, and I didn't know what to do, and I thought, you know what, you're probably right. I am a pastor, and I ought to go help. And you shouldn't do that. I'll take care of this. You know, you kind of feel like I'll be your hero, and I'll go handle this for you. And so I went over to another pastor, Anthony Shepherd. Many of you had him in class. I said, Anthony, this lady came to me, told me about all these problems, and she says, I'm the one who's supposed to fix it. Now, how do I go about doing that? He says, you don't do that. Why doesn't she do that? She knows about it. It's her friend. She's the one who's supposed to do that. Well, later in life, I found out exactly who the spiritual people are. Brethren, listen, even if a man is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, who are the spiritual ones? The immediate three or four verses around it do not define the spiritual ones, but if you go back to chapter 5, you're going to find them. Look at chapter 5 again. But I say, walk by the Spirit, verse 16, and you will not carry out the desires of the flesh. Those are the fleshly ones. You've already looked at it once today, verse 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. The spiritual people in our community are not the people with the titles, are not the people in leadership. It's not the deans, it's not the RDs, it's not the RAs. We hope they're spiritual, but their position doesn't make them spiritual. Spirituality has always been an internal dynamic. The spiritual people of the Master's College are the people who are walking in the Spirit. It's like, how obvious could it be? So we find out who needs help. It's the people who are caught in a trespass, the people who have stepped into the lifestyle of flesh or walking on the path of flesh. Who are the people who are supposed to go help? The Bible says it's the spiritual people who are supposed to do that. And who are the spiritual people? Let me tell you something. Three things it doesn't say. It doesn't say you need a title or a position, number one. It doesn't even say you have to know that person very well. You don't even have to be their best friend. You don't even have to be a good friend. You just have to care. If you know of someone in your life and you say, I can't go confront that person, I can't talk to that person about their sin, I don't even know them. Interesting. It doesn't say that here. It doesn't say, brethren, if a man is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual and have a tremendously dynamic long-term friendship with this person, go talk to him. Here's the point. To know about another person's sin, to know about another Christian's sin, is immediately to become responsible for it. Because we are the what? The body of Christ. And when one member suffers, the other member suffers. And your sin affects me and it affects everybody else. And if I know you're in trouble, you're affecting the entire body of Christ. And therefore, whether I have a long-term relationship with you or I barely know your name, we've been both baptized into the same body of Jesus Christ, and I'm responsible to help. Here's the third thing. This one always gets us. Number one, to be a spiritual person doesn't mean you have to have a title. Number two, it doesn't mean you have to have a long-term relationship. And number three, it doesn't mean to say you've never struggled in that particular sin area. I couldn't go talk to him about drinking. I've drunk myself. How many times have you heard that? There's no way I can approach them on their anger. I get angry all the time. I'm discredited. And to a degree, there is some truth in that. You know, pull the thing out of your own eye before you get the one out of theirs. But I've heard so many people say, no, I could never go talk to them about that sin because I've struggled with that, and they know I've struggled with that, and it just would never work. Well, maybe you're in a stronger position to go talk to them about that sin because you had that same problem, and you understand it, and you've got empathy, and you care, so go get together. So question number one we've asked is, who are the people that need help? The people that have stepped off the path. Who are the people that can help? Anybody who is trying to live according to God's principles. Anybody who's living a Spirit-filled life as a characteristic pattern. Doesn't mean you're perfect. Doesn't mean you have a title. And it doesn't mean you know that person at a deep level always. What's the third question that comes out of this verse? Brethren, even if a man is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness. What does the word restore mean? Or otherwise put, what is my goal when I go to help this person? What is my goal when I go to help this person? Is my goal to beat them down and to show them that they're sinful and to show them that they're breaking the rules and to show them that they're out of God's will for their life and to show them in the process that I'm holier than they are? That's not the goal. Restoration. It's a very wonderful word in the New Testament. Katarizo. It's used in Mark chapter 1. It says John and Peter were in the boat mending their nets. They were fishermen. And the word mending is in that passage translated from the same Greek word that we get restore over here. Exact same word, they just translated into English with different words. So here's John and here's Peter and they're in the boat and they're restoring their net. Why are they doing that? Because nets get broken. When you fish and you throw your net over in your boat and it catches on something, then it gets torn and it gets ripped. And what good is a fishing net that's ripped? You got a ripped fishing net. So you put the fish in it, you let the fish up, and the fish are still in the water because they go through the rip. It's pointless. It's useless. You need a new net. Better yet, fix your old one. So that's exactly the picture that we have. How does God view the sinner? How does God view the believer who chooses to step off the path and walk in the deeds of the flesh? He views them not with anger, not with contempt, not with you're wrong. He views them with, there's my child, and because of their choices and the sin in their life, they have ripped their net. They were created for useful things. To be involved in service and training and encouragement. And I'm doing wonderful things in their life. But when they step into sin, then they rip the net of their life and they become useless. So as we identify people who are involved in sin, and we say, I'm qualified to go, I can help. I'm not perfect, but I can help. You got to know why you're going. You're not going to rip on them for being a bad person. You're going to plead with them. Your net is broken. Your net is torn. You're not being useful. You're not being fulfilled. You're not doing what God has created you to do. Can we put you back together? Would you be willing to put your life back together? Would you be willing to stop that? so that you can be fully useful in the hand of God. Last question that comes to my mind. Brethren, even if a man is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness. What does that word gentleness mean? It comes from a root word that means loving friendship. Loving friendship. You know, people say, I could never hold another person accountable for their sin because I'm their friend. And I feel like puking. Have you ever heard people say that? I would never, ever, ever hold another person accountable because they're my friend. I could never do that. And that is the absolute, biblically, that is the absolute opposite of true friendship. True friendship doesn't cover somebody up and hide them up and let them continue on to tear the net of their life. True friendship, honest friendship, godly friendship says, I care too much about your life to let you to continue to live like that. So as we sit here and we think of the people that we know, the people that you know, the person's name that's in your head as I'm talking, and you're saying, man, that person needs restoration. That person is definitely off the path. I am definitely capable of helping. Their life is definitely torn and ripped. They are not being useful and they need to be put back together. Don't in any way say to yourself, but I'm their friend and I would never do anything to hold them accountable for that because we're friends. Say to yourself, I'm a very superficial person and I don't want any heat in my life. And I don't care enough about them to help. Because that's really what it is. Most cases. A lot of you are excited about going to Japan this summer. And when you do, you're going to meet a guy by the name of Art Moe. And I met Art Moe. He's the man who runs the summer program. I can still remember sitting in a high-rise building in Tokyo somewhere with Bob Provost. We'd just gotten off the plane, and here's Art Moe, and we're trying to get a grip on the Japanese culture. Just a little bit of a briefing from this guy who's been there for so many years. So he starts telling us all the things, and he comes on to one thing that is so peculiar about the Japanese culture. They don't even have a word for the word sin. The Japanese don't have a word in their language to say personal sin. They have a word to say social sin. If I were to do something to embarrass my family, then I have committed a social sin. They're very unified group thought. They don't have individuals as much. So they don't even have a word. And so it makes it very, very hard to evangelize because a lot of evangelization is you're a sinner and you need help. And somehow we ended up on this story. It amazes me how Satan will work in a body of people to move exactly opposite to the direction God would want. There was a general at the end of, nearing the end of World War II. I don't know if I've shared this with you. Near the end of World War II. And you know how they started going with the kamikazes? That's a very honorable thing because they would never give up. They would only die. And so they'd send those guys out in those planes and there was only enough gas to get one way. And they filled everything up with bombs and they were supposed to just crash into these ships. And it was a kamikaze. It was very honorable. It was a religious ceremony. And it was a marvelous thing to do according to the way they were raised. The Japanese people don't quit. And finally the emperor, after the atom bombs, thought it would be a good idea and sensible to quit. But there was a high-ranking general in their army who wasn't up for that a bit, and he thought the emperor was going against all of them. So the general tries to pull a military coup and throw the emperor out of power. And he marshals his forces and he gets his guys together and they storm the palace, and it is failed. And as a result, this general has now committed a tremendous social disgrace, a disgrace upon his country, a disgrace upon his family, and the only possible redemption or restoration that he can make. Now here's a man whose life is torn and his boy's in trouble. The only thing that that culture says by way of restoration is for him, and this is exactly what he did, was to return to his home with his assistant. He bet his respects to his wife of so many years, got his little special towel, their ceremonial religious thing, and he went back into his gardens, and you know the beautiful Japanese gardens, and you can picture how beautiful it would have been. And there he went into the backyard, he got on his knees, he prayed for a little bit, and then he took out a huge knife, and he committed Harry Caray. And the way they did that, they do it sliced this way. You see it like this. But that's not the idea. It's like this, so that the whole process is not an instant death. It's a slow bleeding to death. And it took that man 2 hours to die. And he stood there in integrity and in honor to the way he had been raised. And finally he bled to death and he found him. And so his attendant picked up his little towel, and he brought it back in to the wife, and he said, "Your husband has died an honorable man." And you see, that is the absolute antithesis of what God's heart desires for people.